As he led his colleagues, the directors of the world's half-dozen most famous museums, three eminent anthropologists, the heads of two media empires, down into the pit, Del Marco wondered if such a distinguished group of men and women had ever been so silent for so long. But that was the effect that this ebon rectangle had on all visitors, as they realized the implications of the thousands of artifacts that surrounded it. For here was an archaeologist's treasure trove. Crudely fashioned flint tools, countless bones, some animal, some human, and almost all arranged in careful patterns. For centuries, no, millennia, these pitiful gifts had been brought here by creatures with only the first glimmer of intelligence as tribute to a marvel beyond their understanding. And beyond ours, Del Marco had often thought, yet of two things he was certain, though he doubted if proof would ever be possible. This was where, in time and space, the human species had really begun. And this monolith was the very first of all its multitudinous gods. Chapter 9. Skyland. "There were mice in my bedroom last night," Poole complained, only half seriously. "Is there any chance you could find me a cat?" Dr. Wallace looked puzzled, then started to laugh. "You must have heard one of the cleaning microts. I'll get the programming checked so they don't disturb you. Try not to step on one if you catch it at work. If you do, it will call for help, and all its friends will come to pick up the pieces." "So much to learn, so little time." No, that wasn't true, Poole reminded himself. He might well have a century ahead of him, thanks to the medical science of this age. The thought was already beginning to fill him with apprehension rather than pleasure. At least he was now able to follow most conversations easily, and had learned to pronounce words so that Indra was not the only person who could understand him. He was very glad that English was now the world language, though French, Russian, and Mandarin still flourished. "I've another problem, Indra, and I guess you're the only person who can help. When I say God, why do people look embarrassed?" Indra did not look at all embarrassed. In fact, she laughed. "That's a very complicated story. I wish my old friend Dr. Khan was here to explain it to you, but he's on Ganymede, curing any remaining true believers he can find there. When all the old religions were discredited, let me tell you about Pope Pius XX sometime, one of the greatest men in history. We still needed a word for the prime cause, or the creator of the universe, if there is one. There were lots of suggestions, Deo, Theo, Jove, Brahma. They were all tried, and some of them are still around, especially Einstein's favorite, the old one. But Deus seems to be the fashion nowadays. I'll try to remember, but it still seems silly to me." "You'll get used to it. I'll teach you some other reasonably polite expletives to use when you want to express your feelings. You said that all the old religions have been discredited. So what do people believe nowadays?" "As little as possible. We're all either deists or theists."
"You've lost me. Definitions, please."
"They were slightly different in your time, but here are the latest versions. Theists believe there's not more than one God. Deists, that there is not less than one God."
"I'm afraid the distinction's too subtle for me."
"Not for everyone. You'd be amazed at the bitter controversies it's aroused. 5 centuries ago, someone used what's known as surreal mathematics to prove there's an infinite number of grades between theists and deists. Of course, like most dabblers with infinity, he went insane. By the way, the best-known deists were Americans. Washington, Franklin, Jefferson."
"A little before my time, though you'd be surprised how many people don't realize it."
"Now I've some good news, Joe. Professor Anderson has finally given his... what was the phrase? Okay. You're fit enough to go for a little trip upstairs, to the lunar level."
"What?"